the Cosmos. I'm Robert C. Newman. This is the fourth of four talks on introductory astronomy for homeschoolers that were first given at Harvey Cedars Bible Conference in June of 2009 and are planned for another presentation in late August of 2009 as well. Carl Sagan said, "The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be." If Christianity is true, then Carl Sagan is mistaken. But we can perhaps define the cosmos as all that we humans can see from in here where we've been placed. Usually the terms cosmos and universe are used interchangeably. So the topics we want to look at for this lecture are: what can we see from in here, and how have our observations and our theorizing interacted? Let's take these topics in that order. Looking out further and further. Here's a diagram of the stars nearest to our sun. And we're put here with the flat plane there with the circles in it is kind of the ecliptic plane. North of there is north and south of there is south, more or less. And so if we look carefully, we'll see that the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, which is down at about 5 o'clock on this diagram, is is below the plane. And the bright star Procyon, which is in the upper left, is up above the plane. The circles in the plane are half a parsec, one parsec, one half, two, two and a half, three, three and a half, I think, is what we've got there. So it shows you distances out to the various stars. Most of these stars are not stars we will have heard of, but if you look over on the left-hand side, kind of at about 8 o'clock, you'll see Sirius, and I've already mentioned Alpha Centauri, and Procyon is also a fairly bright star that you can see in the northern hemisphere as well. Most of the others, as I say, would not be stars we'd be familiar with. They're just not very bright stars. Here's a diagram of the same sort, but it runs out to 250 light years, so much, much further out. The other was 3.5 parsecs, which would be about 10 light years or so. And on this one, the plane, I think, is the plane of the galaxy, with an arrow pointing towards us here at the bottom, back towards the galactic center. So we're imagining that we're viewing this from the galactic center. The sun is still here in the middle of this diagram. And if you look just to the right of the sun, you can see Vega there at about 2:30 perhaps, but in real close inside the innermost circle. The circle looks like the inner circle is about 50 light years. And then the next one is about 150, and the next one's about 250. So somewhat strange spacing for the circles, but we've got that bar up the top that shows 100 light years. Well, we've got the sun and Vega there. Arcturus is shown above the sun at nearly 12 o'clock, but not out very far, just out of the second circle. And Regulus is shown above the sun at kind of 11 o'clock and out at the outer circle. And then Spica is shown really at the top of the picture to the left and such. Those are all fairly bright stars that we can see from here on Earth in the northern hemisphere. This is another picture of about the same size, but here, instead of giving a three-dimensional picture, the stuff is all crunched down to two dimensions, and it shows us some of the gas and dust in the region as well. So this whole picture is labeled the local bubble, and several loops of galactic cloud, I guess, there. The sun is still pretty near the center, in the right near the section local fluff, and you can see Sirius and Arcturus, and Aldebaran and the Hyades are all have little green sort of rounded edged rectangles around them to show you what you're looking at there. So, another picture of kind of our local area. Moving out further, this is a picture of the sun and its neighbors out to several thousand light years with a little sort of a searchlight beam shown there, which is what's called here the Kepler search space. Satellite Kepler has, I think, already now gone up and is to look for planets in one particular direction out to 3,000 light years. So showing you the direction it will be looking. The pictures in this, rather than stars, are all nebula of one sort or another. That is collections of gas. One of the more familiar ones that you see pictures of rather frequently is the one that's about at 9 o'clock just below the searchlight beam, is a North American nebula. It's a gas cloud that looks a little bit like North America. And the several rather familiar ones above the Kepler search space label there, the Eagle Nebula, the Omega Nebula, the Trifid Nebula, and the Lagoon Nebula would also be that. A very famous nebula resulting from a supernova is right at the bottom of the picture, kind of at about 5 o'clock, the Crab Nebula. And then the Orion Nebula is just to the right and above that as well. So you get some of the picture of what we're looking at out to about 3,000 light years. Remember, it's about 100,000 light years across our whole galaxy, and so maybe 20 or 30,000 light years from our sun into the center of our galaxy. So we're looking only about a tenth of the way into the center of our sun, a center of our galaxy, in a searchlight beam of this length. Here's our galaxy. Showed you this picture in the previous lecture as we think it would look viewed from above. Nobody's been out there, none of us have been out there to take a look. And we believe it's a barred spiral. And we see the two arms coming out, one at about maybe 1:30 and one at about 7:30. And then as these arms move out, they split into more arms. The labels down here below the galaxy center, Norma, Scutum, Crux, Sagittarius, Orion, Perseus, Cygnus, are what we call the different arms of our galaxy based upon constellations in which that particular arm is more prominent. And then down there at the left side, there's a little bar, scale bar, showing you what 10,000 light years look like. Here's the local neighborhood of our galaxy, and it shows you the little dwarf galaxies around our galaxy. The next picture will show some of the big galaxies near us, but these are the galaxies, small dwarf galaxies near us. The dark ones are ones that were known before 2005, and the red ones were the ones that were discovered since 2005. So a number of these have been discovered recently with some better techniques of looking at wider angle in the sky with good light gathering power. With some of our best telescopes, they look at such a narrow spot that it's hard to pick up a particular galaxy because you're looking at only a very small fraction of it. Known objects in this one that are fairly well known would be the two LMC and SMC, which are down at about 7 o'clock from our Milky Way galaxy. That's the Large Magellanic Cloud and the Small Magellanic Cloud. They were discovered for the West by Magellan in his voyage around the world, and they're in the Southern Hemisphere. So unless you've been down there and looking around the sky at night, you probably have not seen them. We move up now to our local group, different kind of diagram, but our Milky Way is here shown in the right center, and the two other big galaxies in our local group, the Andromeda Galaxy over at about 10 o'clock from our galaxy is very famous. Picture. It's kind of the standard galaxy picture you see, and it is a galaxy that's perhaps 1.5 or 2 times the size of our galaxy. The other big galaxy here is a triangular one shown here in the around 8 o'clock. And then below our Milky Way galaxy, down around 530 or 6 is the LMC and the SMC. The other ones, say, are less well-known and just have Messier numbers, M110, or NGC numbers, New Galactic Catalog numbers from the late 19th century. Here's a galaxy cluster, Abel 1689, and you can see an awful lot of galaxies in a picture like this. The things with little points sticking out are nearby stars, and that's the effect they have in a telescope. They make what's called a diffraction pattern that shows up in those little points. But the objects that look either like fuzzy balls or looks like flat sort of things, they are elliptical or spiral galaxies. Here's a diagram showing some of the galaxy clusters around our galaxy. Our galaxy would be right in the middle of this picture, and the two wedges coming out from it obscured are the part of the sky beyond our galaxy we can't see because the gas clouds in our galaxy obscure that. So we're looking up out of our galaxy or down out of our galaxy with the other sorts of things. And you can see some big clusters over on the left-hand side, the Hydra Centaur supercluster, and up at the top, the Coma supercluster, and over at the lower right, the Perseus Pisces supercluster, etc. And you can see besides these clusters, there are areas that seem to be rather empty, and then there's sort of bands or webs or something connecting these. So voids and clusters, if you like, seems to be the kind of pattern we see as we look on a larger scale. Here's diagram of the superclusters with some distance information on it as well. Right in the middle is where we are in the Virgo cluster right next to us. And I believe the alignments here is the galactic plane for the flat plane there. Notice up just to the left of the label superclusters, there's a little distance bar, 100 million light years. So that shows you the scale we're looking at. We're looking at something over a billion light years out to the edges of this particular picture. And again, we're looking virtually at all superclusters. And then three of the things labeled in red are voids, areas where there's not much of anything in those particular directions. Well, that carries us out about as far as we can see with visible light using big telescopes on Earth and the big telescope that we have in orbit, the Hubble Space Telescope, which we're looking at here. Hubble Space Telescope has taken some long exposures that allow us to look at galaxies very, very far out, very, very dim galaxies. This particular picture here now is the Hubble Deep Field 1996, and it's looking at a very narrow piece of the sky. If you look at the blue labeling down there at the bottom, 1.5 by 1.125 arc minutes. Degree is, the sky, you can divide up a circle into 360 degrees. You can divide up a degree into minutes. So angle that is a minute of arc, or an arc minute, is what about the size of this picture, 1.5 by 1.125, the two dimensions on this. The size of our sun or moon in the sky is about 30 arc minutes, so half a degree. So this is looking at something, a much smaller piece of the sky than the size of our sun or moon would take up. And it shows you some very distant galaxies out there. I think the one thing right in the center is a nearby star, but everything else are galaxies, and they're pretty far out galaxies. So looking at very deep. This is the ultra deep field taken in 2003-2004 and shows us other galaxies. And we begin to see some rather strange looking galaxies here, that the very earliest galaxies look somewhat different than our galaxies do. Well, that's really about as deep as we have seen so far into the universe, if you like, using what we call the kind of light that humans can see, although these obviously helped enormously by big telescopes and by long exposures. We can, however, in some sense, see deeper with looking at the radio wavelengths. And this device, the Cosmic Background Explorer, was a satellite built explicitly to look at the radiation that comes to us from all directions, discovered back in the 60s by Penzias and Wilson, that we think is the remnants of the Big Bang. It's not actually the flash of the Big Bang, although it's been pictured that way sometime in popular science presentations, but it's picturing the moment at which the universe became transparent. It had been opaque before that, and now it becomes transparent as it cools off. The temperature reaches perhaps about 3,000 degrees at that point, and that's estimated to be about 300,000 years after the Big Bang. It would be equivalent to what we think of as looking at the sun. The sun looks like it's got a surface. Well, that's not a solid surface. Below that surface, the sun is opaque, and above that surface, the sun's gases, if you like, are transparent. Well, we're looking at that here. Before this 300,000-year point, the universe is opaque. That is, light can't travel very far without bouncing off of something, being absorbed or readmitted, etc. After that, it can travel freely. The Cosmic Background Explorer then investigates this, and here are the COBE observations. The rough observation is the top one, and that actually shows something that looks almost like a yin and yang symbol, except here it's squished into a elliptical projection. But the red is the direction away from which ourself and our COBE satellite are moving, and the blue is the direction in which we are moving, and it actually is giving you apparently some absolute information on our movement through the universe. When that is subtracted out, you get the middle panel here, and that largely gives us the radiation from our galaxy, which is the band across the center. And then when that is subtracted out, you're looking out at the really distant stuff. And this stuff appears to be stuff that is connected with this point when the universe became transparent. Since the COBE satellite made its observations, a more sophisticated satellite, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, has been put up. And here we see an artist sketch of what that looks like out in space. And here's a comparison of its observation with the COBE observation, what would have been the third picture in that previous panel, now shown at the top here, COBE and the Microwave Anisotropy Project picture below. And you see it's the same picture, but it's now got a lot higher resolution, and you can see the detail of it much, much better. From that, a number of striking deductions have been made, particularly involving things about dark matter and dark energy. We'll say a bit about that in a bit. Well, that brings us from our looking further and further out to observation and theory. We've now given you a quick tour of observations. Here we'll consider how these have interacted with theory. We're going to give a sketch of cosmological theories. Then we're going to note the triumph of the Big Bang version, and finally we're going to ask, where do we go from here? So, let's have a look. Cosmological theories. At the beginning of the 20th century, many astronomers thought the universe had always existed, and that it was basically static. No one knew how stars burned, so they weren't sure how long they would last. Einstein's general theory of relativity began to change all of that. When applied to the universe, Einstein saw that this predicted an expanding or contracting universe. Since at that time no one thought that was the case, Einstein added a fudge factor to make it static. But observations of galaxies in the 1910s and 1920s by Slipher and Hubble showed that the galaxies were indeed moving apart. In the late 1920s, George Lemaître proposed what later came to be called the Big Bang Theory. He suggested that the universe was expanding from a very hot, dense state, which he presumed to be creation. Many were unhappy with this, as they didn't like the concept of a creation. So, alternatives to creation were proposed. Some modified the Big Bang Theory to avoid a creation by having one or more bounces in the history of the universe. Others proposed a steady-state theory in which an infinite, eternal universe is continually expanding and adding more matter in such a way as to look always the same. Well, observations were made to try and test these models, and attempts to count the number of galaxies in a given volume at increasing distances from us suggested the universe was more crowded earlier in its history than it is now. This became even more obvious when quasars were discovered in the 1960s. They are the centers of very bright galaxies, kind of what should we say, a neutron star or something of that sort in the center of bright galaxies. And the same test was applied to them. The steady state theory had predicted that the density of the universe was constant everywhere in time, and this didn't seem to be the case. Also in the mid-1960s, Penzias and Wilson discovered that the sky was glowing in all directions at microwave frequencies. This had been predicted years before as a consequence of Big Bang theories. In the following years, the radiation was carefully measured at various wavelengths and found to fit the predicted black body spectrum almost perfectly. Here's a chart of the frequency of the radiation measured across the bottom, the intensity of the radiation measured vertically, and data from the early satellites that measured this with 400 sigma error bars, which is very, very, what should we say, wide range, and the data falls virtually perfectly on the dot from the data, well inside the error bars for a 2.725 degree Kelvin black body. So the results was so astounding that when the astronomers saw this presented at the meeting of the American Astronomical Society, they all clapped at that such a striking fit to the theory. This essentially eliminated the steady state theories from competition because they didn't predict anything like this, leaving the field to varieties of the Big Bang. Since then, the bouncing varieties of the Big Bang have been eliminated as no way has been found to convert a collapsing universe into an expanding one. Look like they go into a black hole instead. Where do we go from here? The simplest reading for the Big Bang would be a creation event at the bang, just as suggested in the Genesis 1. Scientists who don't believe in God prefer to think of our universe as just a bubble formed in an infinite, eternal, static universe. So far, we have no clear evidence of more universes than our own. Dark matter. It's been known for many years, back into the 30s, in fact, so now 70 or 80 years, that there's not enough visible matter in the galaxies to hold them together. This led to the proposal of dark matter, which we cannot see, as a source for the additional energy. This has apparently been confirmed by the recent data from the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Project. In the past few years, it's become apparent that, contrary to all expectations, our universe is expanding faster than it was earlier in its history. A quantity called dark energy is proposed to explain this acceleration of our universe's expansion. And that's where we are. That's the end of our talk. It's certainly not the end, I think, of our discovering things about the universe. What I found in my experience is that as we look at more and more evidence, although things are often surprising in one way or another, that the scientific data really does fit the picture that the Bible gives us of a universe that is created and designed by the most intelligent being that exists, the God of the Bible. Well, we're going to quit here to complete our introductory astronomy course for homeschoolers, you should have a look at the PowerPoint talk, The Star of Bethlehem. What was it?